So why don't we start with, so they're doing, so with our theme that's, that will be coming up, no, I'm going to change it. Just disregard every little thing I said right then.
Okay.
In fact, edit that shit, man.
Welcome to another episode of Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. From Portland, Oregon, you are Richard Wally.
And from that California place down under, you're Cassidy Robinson.
Yes. Story.
Is this going to be as dramatic as last week?
No.
Because that was like 10 minutes.
I know. Nothing is dramatic as last week.
Oh, okay.
One of the papers that I'm writing for my class, my world cinema class, is on the British New Wave. So I've been watching a bunch of films from that era, and I was watching If last night.
Okay, good. I wanted to ask this.
Oh, you wanted to go and get into this. Okay.
Well, because, yeah, you Facebooked it. And
yeah.
I mean, I didn't know if you wanted to do it on air. I was going to ask you off air, but I forgot.
So. It's as good as anything. So I was watching If, which all has to do with, like, you know, a bunch of, like, British boarding school kids. And Malcolm McDowell's first film before he did Clockwork Orange. There's a lot of scenes of, like, these kids, like, being tortured, basically, by each other, because they're all, like, you know, it's mixed. So it's, like, kind of like Harry Potter, where it's, like, anywhere down from, like, 11-year-olds are, like, in the same sort of areas, houses, as, like, 17-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, there's a lot of bullying. And it got me thinking, and I decided to, like, go on an adventure on Facebook last night and see if I could find any of the people who bullied me back in high school.
Well, you're on there with one, aren't you?
No, you never.
I'm just kidding.
Me.
I know.
But that's what I was gonna. I mean, I couldn't.
Yeah.
None of them. Weirdly enough, I even like looked at like friends of friends of friends inside their friend list to see if maybe I could trace it like back.
Why did you do this? This is creepy. Is this like a, like,
because I had to know
them?
I had to know, like, I had to know, like, are they doing well? Are they different? Are they married? Are they, like, successful, unsuccessful? All of that stuff. For my own edification. Okay. So I took it the fact that they weren't even on Facebook or any kind of social media to say they're probably not successful.
Or they're so successful they can't be on.
They don't have the time.
Well, yeah. They either don't have the time or they can't because people would, you know, be bugging them all the time. So
yeah.
Maybe they're super successful.
They're like
one day you run into them and they'll flick their cigarette butts at you.
Because they even still hate me or even still have any kind of remembrance of me, but because they think I'm just some bum in the street.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was going to ask you if there's anybody like that you would want to look back and see, but then you weren't really bullied in high school.
No, not at all, really.
Like, really at all. Yeah, in fact, in some cases, you were the bully.
Probably.
Maybe
I
not.
Mean, I full admit it, like, at times. Like there was a point in time, but I mean, it was more like semi-friends and stuff like that. Like, I don't know, it was kind of weird.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say that you were, like, well known for bullying, but I would maybe in your younger
when I was younger, this is junior high years, or yeah, those were the times where I would say came closest. I mean, I don't think I was like a full blown like try to torment people. That wasn't until I was much older and we did this podcast together.
Yeah. So that leaves me to question. There's probably people who are like,
who are looking me up,
looking you up to see how successful or unsuccessful you are.
Yeah, they're probably pretty excited. They're like, that fool doing, you know, podcasting. What the hell? Yeah, I have no idea. I
don't just know, angrily typing away on their computer. It's like, oh, this motherfucker. Oh, you what know, are you up
yeah,
to?
Yeah, I don't think
oh,
so.
Oh, you live in Portland? What a fucking, oh, fucking, it's married. Who is this bruiser? Oh, look, Jackie. Okay. Okay.
Did you just call my wife a bruiser? What the hell? What the hell, man? That was pretty bullyish of you.
It was a little bullyish of me. But yeah, that was, I mean, that's what, my last night was like. You know, they say you shouldn't do anything, make any kind of decisions after 2 a.m. You also should just not be online after 2 a.m.
Is that the magical time?
Yeah.
If I had regular people, like schedule,
sleep
like
schedule.
Sleeping schedule. Yeah. Then I would probably say that that's fine, but I don't. Yeah. So,
well, that's kind of how I justify it. My 2 a.m. isn't everyone else's. My 2 a.m. is like everyone else's midnight.
Yeah. I shouldn't be on the internet after like 6 in the morning.
So you're breaking your rule right now.
Yeah. Oh, shut up. You do what I meant.
Have you done anything exciting? You said you were kind of busy lately.
Oh, I haven't been. My wife has been. I've been remarkably unbusy. I did change the brake pads, in the car yesterday.
Woo!
Yeah, that was about the highlight of my week, so.
Do you think you did it right?
Oh, yeah. It's done.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I've driven my car, so yes.
You're not gonna, like, fly off the Portland Bridge one day?
That would be remarkably, like, I'd have to be driving really fast to do that. And there are several bridges, like, which one? The Still Bridge, I don't know.
The one. No. The one that everyone knows.
Oh, yeah? Which one's that?
The big one.
Oh, okay. You do know, like, the name, like, the other name for, one of the nicknames for Portland is the Bridge City, right?
Sure.
Okay. Cool.
All right. Well, we might as well just get into our first news story then.
Okay.
And I'll let you start. What is it?
So, according to Geek Tyrant and a bunch of other sites, a TV actor named Ray Fisher will be playing Cyborg in this Batman versus Superman movie.
Yeah. This was just announced like right before the weekend, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So yet another.
I think it was a WonderCon thing.
Probably. That happened. Yet another character added to the roster of this not Justice League movie.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess I think Cyborg there's been iterations where he has been on the Justice League, but he's mostly known for his role in the Teen Titans. So I was just like, okay, I guess, whatever.
What show is he on?
I don't know. He just said he was a TV actor. I didn't really go into it because I have no idea who he is.
He's on. They've already have him listed for Batman Superman. Yeah, I'm not familiar with him. Cool.
I have no idea. Like this film, like just it kind of confuses me. Maybe it's it just is a Justice League movie, and that's what's happening, and they're trying to like pull one over on us. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I have no idea. I'm just like, okay, cool, whatever, guys.
What's funny is when someone first told me about it. Immediately in my head, I was thinking Metallo.
Oh, okay.
Instead of Cyborg.
So you're like halfway like, okay, cool.
So I was like, oh, I guess he'll be the villain. They've never done him before. And then I was like, wait a minute, no. Cyborg's, yeah, never mind.
It's in any reaction? Because for me, it's just more kind of baffled. I'm just like, okay. Okay, cool.
I mean, every day they keep announcing more characters in this thing, and I don't know how they're going to fit it all in. It's sounding more and more like a bomb ready to explode.
Well, yeah, I'm waiting for them to announce Lobo or some other like fairly liked but really kind of obscure character.
All right, my first news item, or my only news item, is Steven Spielberg has been announced to direct a BFG movie based on the Roald Dahl novel.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. Did you see the original BFG cartoon?
I'm sure I did. I don't remember it. I mean, I vaguely do because it was. I remember it was. It wasn't it sort of like the animation that was already in the books and stuff.
I guess kind of like I don't know. It was more like I don't know. It's kind of Rankin Bass-ish sort of looking, but not like it was. I want to say it was done in like the 70s or 80s.
Okay.
So it had kind of an antique look to it. But it was, I remember it really kind of freaked me out a little bit as a kid. Like, the BFG was fine, but then, like, you know, the rest of the giants who eat children.
Yeah.
And how they, giants. Yeah, they talk about it and, like, you know, the Swedish kids are sweeter and, you know, grinding bones beneath their teeth, and it gets kind of, like, into it.
Mm-hmm.
So that would, it'd be interesting to see that. Done in a live action movie. Or is it, hopefully it's live action and it's not all tin-tinned.
It does say that it's live action.
Good. So yeah, I mean, they, you know, they gotta cast a capable little actress in the lead and, have some special effects that don't look like Jack and the Giant Slayer.
Yeah. Do you know, is there anybody in particular you want for the big friendly giant?
For the BFG? Friendly?
Yeah.
Hmm. Is it still too soon to have Michael Richards from Seinfeld Kramer?
No. Why would it be too soon?
Because he had that whole screaming like at the heckler at one of his comedy shows and calling him the N-word.
I forgot about that. No, I forgot about it, so yeah.
So the rest of the world's fine, too.
Yeah, as long as that doesn't happen in the movie. That'd be a very different interpretation.
Yeah. So. Alright, what's your other news item?
My other news item, and we're going to springboard into our pet topic.
Alright.
This has been kind of a theme going on in the news. So Friday the 13th will bludgeon your TV sets with Jason Voorhees for new series. That's on CinemaBlend. Uh-huh. So this is in a spasm of a bunch of movies gone TV or vice versa and TV yeah. gone movies. I don't know any opinions on specifically a Friday the 13th one. I'm like, okay, are they going to go as gory? Are they going to do a musical episode? Because that's always been my fantasy. I think I've told you about my want to do a Friday the 13th musical.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'd be down.
Yeah, see, that I'm definitely down for. A TV show, though, I'm just kind of like, I guess.
I just don't really see how this could be good.
Maybe it would be like a Bruce Banner kind of like Hulk thing, like the 80s show.
So, so he's the protagonist. America. Okay. What? Because I thought, like, it would be like a, I don't know, just like a rinse and repeat every episode. Like, a new bunch of kids come and then they get killed in a cabin every episode.
That's probably what it will end up being. But I like the idea of him wandering around the United States murdering people.
Yeah. You know, it's probably actually closer to the truth. They're probably going to turn him into some kind of murderous avenger where he, like, kills drug dealers and stuff. So that they can have their cake and eat it, too?
Maybe. I have no idea. Like no, this is one of those ideas. It's like, okay, we'll see. And then it usually turns out bad.
Mm. So. Yeah. I mean, there was Nightmare on Elm Street TV show at one point.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
Not really. I mean, it was basically like they treated him like the Crypt Keeper.
Right.
It was a little bit more tongue-in-cheek. Like, by that point, the movies have become a lot more comedic, so they kind of took that direction. I don't know. That show probably has its fans.
Yeah.
But I would think
it would really be hard to do Jason as a horror host.
Yeah, because he doesn't talk. He doesn't do anything except for kill people.
Well, yeah, that's Jason. Yeah, I have no idea where they're gonna go. I'm going to assume it's not gonna be campy. That seemed like a very 80s 90s kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't know what direction they would go, like, with it. So, I mean, maybe they'll have, like, this big narrative, or...
Yeah, some, like...
Does it say what TV station?
I'm not looking at the article right now.
Yeah, I'm not seeing the channel, so... That's where I get, like, okay, it really depends on what channel it would be on.
Mm-hmm.
If I'd be interested or not. Like, if they said basically FX or AMC, then I'd be like, okay, what are they doing with this?
Yeah.
Or even any of, like, the Showtimes, Cinemaxes, HBOs of the world, but I doubt any of those are doing it. It's probably, like, the History Channel. Jason in History.
They are doing, like, narrative TV now, so...
Yeah.
They have that Viking show. I don't know. I assume, I would bet, that it's going to be kind of a Dexter-ish type thing, except for...
That doesn't make any sense, though, because Dexter, I mean, they...
Maybe without the, like, double life part.
He, like, speaks and, like, is a character and a person, and they kind of explore his ethos and stuff like that. Like, this would just be... Like, I don't know how you could do that.
Maybe it's a maybe it's like a prequel series, like the Bates Motel.
It's not.
Oh. Well, then I really don't know.
Yeah.
It doesn't... Sounds kind of dead in the water, but we'll find out.
Yeah. So, I mean, we did all the conjecturing. So, this leads me kind of into the question, with all these things coming up, either TV becoming movies or movies becoming TV, is there anything in particular that you would want to see come from the small screen to the big screen, or the big screen to the small screen? Or is there any potential for anything there?
I was thinking about that, like... movies that would make better TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the medium actually works better for it.
Sure.
And I was trying to think, like, what are some movies that have a lot of characters but not enough time to really go into them? Mm-hmm. And a TV show could kind of flesh that out a little better.
Right.
There was a movie that I thought was mostly mediocre, released by Richard Curtis, called Pirate Radio. Okay. I don't know if you remember it.
I didn't see it. I do remember it. I remember the cover specifically.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was basically like a bunch of... It took place in the 60s on a boat. And they had like a pirate radio station that they were playing offshore. And a bunch of like these British comedian DJs. And they all were kind of like cool and hip. And there was like a young kid who just joined their crew or whatever. And he sort of, it's like coming-of-age type of deal. And it wasn't that great of a movie, and it really didn't have a whole lot to say, other mm-hmm. than rock and roll is cool. Mm-hmm. But I feel like if it was a TV show, and it was about exploring these characters, and you could build little tensions and little dramas within, because there was a huge cast,
mm-hmm.
And a great cast, but not that great of a movie, because the narrative, the arc of the narrative, was kind of like been there, done that. Mm. But if you just use this kid character as a cipher to explore all these other characters, and then you could like have all these like little internal dramas and stuff, I think it would actually work better as a TV show.
Okay.
That came to mind. Also, even though I really love Mulholland Drive as a movie,
sure.
knowing that it was supposed to be the pilot to a TV show, I can see, like, the first 2 hours, and then the last half hour, he kind of ties it together in a different way, because the TV pilot got scrapped, and he decided to make it a movie. But if you look at the first 2 hours, you can see, like, all of the little threads he was building that were supposed to become their own little dramas in the TV show. And if, especially if you've seen Twin Peaks... the pilot of that's built very similarly, where you have all of these red herring characters that you're supposed to wonder, oh, is he the guy? Did he put the da da da? And there's a part of me that, as much as I love Mulholland Drive as a standalone thing, I would actually have been really interested to see where that show was going to go.
Okay.
So maybe something like it, or. Or, like, an alternate universe where the crazy stuff in the last half hour doesn't happen?
Is there time travel?
Possibly.
Oh, exciting. I mean, I jokingly said Big Bang, and I don't mean that. I wouldn't want to see that as a movie. Mm. I actually see. I have a really hard time, and I'm kind of surprised that you came up with stuff. Is there anything from TV that you wanted to see
as a movie?
Yeah.
You know, me and a bunch of friends were talking about the possibility of a Jetsons movie. Because, it, you know, I've been casting my Jetsons movie in my head ever since they did the Flintstone movie in the mid-90s.
Oh, okay.
And I've almost got it down, except for I can't figure out who would play Elroy.
So you have a current cast right now?
Almost, yeah. I mean, there's the obvious ones, like Rosie O'Donnell's going to play Rosie the Robot, obviously. And Danny DeVito's going to play Mr. Spacely, obviously. And I had a really hard time with George until Bill Hader became famous. I was like, he would be a good George Jetson.
Hmm.
But I was telling this, we were talking about this with me and my friends in my grad class, and Andy, a friend of ours, he decided his version of a Jetsons movie would be, it would be like a Douglas Sirk melodrama in space, when it would focus all on the wife, okay, and how she's like stuck in like 60s domesticity, and then she can fall in love with a robot, and they would all her kids would shun her.
Uh-huh. I'm into that.
I am too.
Probably more so than anything else so far that I've heard. You know, I don't really know, because I mean, right now they've kind of explored it, and the two genres are very,
like, very different. But it's funny. It's interesting to see how successful some of these shows have been. Like Bates Motel is actually doing fairly well.
Hannibal, that sounds, that sounded terrible.
Why?
It did.
I mean, yeah, it sounded like a bad idea, but the show actually has a following. And Hannibal's doing really well. The Fargo show is getting surprisingly good reviews.
Right.
And I really don't want to like that show, but the cast is so good, it's like I kind of have to see it eventually.
Yeah, no, I hear you. At first I was like, whatever. And then I was like, oh, it's on FX. Maybe I'll look at it. And then I started seeing the cast, and I was like, oh. Okay, I'll probably watch this sometime.
Yeah, at least give it a good 3-episode try.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. If, again, for me, if it comes out on FX or... basically, my big three are AMC, FX, and...
HBO.
Those are the three that I kind of look for. And now Netflix.
Yeah.
Original stuff. So, I mean, if it comes out through there, I mean, I would like to see more Firefly, but that's just, you know.
That's, yeah, that's kind of.
But that would be going from TV to movie back to
back TV. To TV again. It's probably okay happened that, before. But, is there nothing specific? I'm going to put you under pressure.
I don't have any good ideas. Blade Runner came to mind for like 3 seconds, and I was like, I don't know what the fuck that would be.
Well, they're apparently doing a sequel to that, so.
They are doing a sequel to that. I kind of say that, but there could be kind of a procedural,
It could be like CSI, but like cyberpunk-y.
Well, yeah, but it would be before, well, I mean... Well, I mean, it would be kind of hard because the character, depending on your take on it, I take it the way that he's a replicant.
Well, maybe it doesn't have to be Deckard. Maybe it could just be in the world of
Blade Runner. Well, specifically those people that give that administer that test.
Yeah.
Like, you could do kind of a procedural that way with it. So, I mean, there are options, and I can kind of... I almost... dread saying it, because if it happens, I'll feel bad that I ruined Blade Runner.
I would like to see, it was teased on a Funny or Die video.
Okay.
And it was played as a joke, but I was actually like, I really want that to happen. A live-action Daria movie. okay, they had Aubrey Plaza play Daria.
Oh, that actually, that's good. That's good.
And it was really funny, and it was like, I actually would totally watch that movie. And it was done fairly well for a fake trailer.
So no, like, Captain Planet or anything like that?
Captain Planet! No.
Yeah, no, me either.
That is such a relic of the early 90s. I just don't think that would work anymore.
It worked fine in the Funny or Die, because you started talking about that. yeah, I go to class, like, TV that I liked, or movies that I liked. Is there anything on TV? I know you're not a big TV person, but...
TV that I like as a movie?
That you'd want as a movie, yeah.
Well, I just said Daria.
Oh, there you go. Damn it. yeah, I don't know. I don't got anything.
Okay. You don't want to like a...
I mean... Everything I say, like, I dread saying it.
You
like,
say everything it and that then escapes you take it my back. Mouth,
I'm like, I'm just yeah. like, no, I take it back.
I don't you know, I actually this. Think oh. that, like, a Ghostbusters TV show
uh-huh.
would maybe work better than just doing another sequel. Because the expectations are so high.
Sure.
Doing a Ghostbusters 3 is never going to, like, really sit well. Because then you're going to have to, like, throw a couple hundred million dollars at it. It's not going to look like the old show or the old movies. And so it's just going to feel like this weird appendage. But if you do it as a TV show, you could kind of keep the actual tone of the movies a little more intact, and you could have people like Dan Aykroyd or whatever, who, what the fuck are they doing? Yeah. Bill Murray is a little busier, but Dan Aykroyd and some of the others, who are still alive could either show up as cameos or like Dan Aykroyd could kind of be like their mentor and he kind of just stays at the firehouse and barks orders and that kind of stuff.
Well, one thing that I don't sometimes like about TV shows, and we've talked about this on our TV episode, but I don't like the repeating factor when that happens. So it just depends. I mean, that sets up for kind of a repeating thing because they get business.
Yeah.
But it would just depend on how it was handled. So yeah, maybe. That's not the most horrible idea, but I cringe saying it.
Yeah. I mean, it could go terribly wrong, but, you know.
I guess we're going with best case scenario.
Yeah.
but even my best case scenario, I cringe a little.
Like, ugh, I don't want to see the best that could be.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and get into our main review today.
But I have one. I would like to see
son of a bitch.
I know, I'm a son of a bitch. I would like to see the Road Warrior movie, or TV show.
A Road Warrior TV show?
Yeah. Like Mad Max, like just wandering around the wastelands.
Yeah, that could be fun.
Yeah.
Actually, in some ways, I think, like, Riddick would work better as a TV show.
That makes sense. Yeah, kind of that.
Like, the world of Riddick and him in it.
Well, they definitely want to go into that kind of stuff, and, like, you could do the whole him criminal bounty hunter, and then explore all the aliens, too. Yeah, that makes sense. That's a good one.
Yeah. Okay, is that it?
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and get into our review today, which we've been keeping this in the back pocket for a little while. But we're going to be reviewing Jonathan Glazer's Under the Skin, which stars Scarlett Johansson. And it's a very strange, kind of surreal experience. And I don't want to get too detailed into the plot synopsis, because I think part of the fun of this movie is letting it unfold in front of you and not knowing where it's going to go. But I'll set this up just by saying that Under the Skin stars Scarlett Johansson, and she is something. We're not 100% sure, given the details of the movie, exactly what she is, but she is something. And she kind of goes out into the streets and flirts with these Scotlanders who have incredibly thick accents.
Mm-hmm. This is going to have to be a spoilery review. Like, I don't know how you're going to get around it.
Well, I just don't want to give away the big reveals. But basically, she seduces these men, and she has another purpose for them. And I'll just say that. It's kind of a science fiction movie. It's kind of a horror film. But there's almost absolutely no exposition. There's very little dialogue in general, and the dialogue that is spoken is mostly indecipherable because there's like thick Scotland accents. But it's very visual, stark, eerie sort of feeling to the movie. What did you think of Under the Skin?
Now, I started out... Okay, so in general, I think the film is good. I do like it. I really dug kind of what was going on, especially at the start of it. I liked kind of you were like a lot more in her headspace a lot of times.
Yeah.
Versus...
you're following her.
Yeah, and...
And you know the least about her.
Yeah, and the thing about it, too, is that you're... they're kind of showing you from almost... It's almost kind of objective. And, I mean, it just has beautiful visuals. Yeah. I can say that. And some of them are very eerie and kind of off-putting. And I would say that the first... basically half of the film, the first... Mm-hmm. The kind of the first act in a lot of ways, to me is the most potent and the best part of the film. I think as it dissolves and she starts to become or starts to understand or try to understand or whatever more.
Yeah, the humanity.
Human. I think it loses a bit of its potency and I wasn't as into it then. However, I still think it's fairly good. I do like the visuals. I like the visual sense of the movie. With talking with the losing its potency, I think that it kind of slows down the film in a bad way. It actually kind of reminded me of how Place Behind the Pines
kind of
pulled the rug under from itself. But in general, I think it was really good and sort of a bizarre ride where you kind of get this weird like a 2001 kind of Kubrickian kind of thing, or you get kind of like a David Lynch kind of thing, or maybe even David Cronenberg kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you are exploring all these places, and I did find the first part of it very interesting.
Yeah.
I would have rather, I thought if it kept unfolding that aspect, it would have been more interesting of a film.
I feel you a little. I definitely kind of felt, I sort of thought that she was more interesting as a cold, calculating, unhuman.
Mm-hmm.
And the more and more she starts to kind of sympathize and the more and more human she tries to become, mm-hmm. I was a little disappointed that that was the direction of her character, but I felt like the last like 5 minutes, the last 10 minutes where that wraps up that journey, kind of made up for that. And I felt like it was kind of had a purpose, that was still just as interesting as the beginning of the movie when, yeah, it's kind of like, you know, unfolding an origami where you're just, you know, you're just waiting to see what happens next. And you just, it's like, okay, like you literally, it's one of the few movies I can think of in a long time where it's like, you're not going to know what happens in this movie from scene to scene.
Mm-hmm.
And that was exciting about it. And, you know,
well, you don't know exactly.
No, you can kind of get an idea of,
you get
what
the
as happening,
it,
but...
as it plays on, you get the atmospheric sense of what's happening.
Yeah,
the and story I mean, you unfolds might, on. Yeah, but no, I will say though that it is definitely a film that requires. I would definitely be willing to see it again. One, two. I think it's a film you need to sit on because I'm coming off of it pretty fresh.
Yeah.
Like a couple hours maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Away from it. And sometimes immediate reactions aren't the best when talking about a film. And I think with this one specifically, I like your take on the last like few minutes of it because I do agree that it did start to kind of come back around on itself.
Yeah.
And
there's just some...
And I like your take on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. But I still want to say that part... Mm-hmm. It's too long and too drifty.
Yeah, I mean...
I think you get the same sense. I don't think there's enough of a building effect in it. Like, there's not enough of a... I think you get the same thing out of her last, like, where she becomes kind of... Where she... this might be minorly spoilery. Where she sets one of her victims free. I think you get the same sense from that visually. Because this is a very visually driven film.
Yeah, I mean, there's almost, like I said, there's no exposition. Nobody ever comes on screen and says, oh, well, you see, this is happening because blah, 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 blah. Or what we've studied from her molecular blah, blah, blah. Like, none of those conversations ever happen.
Which is for the best. Like, I don't mind when that happens in films, but for this film specifically, it was interesting because they pulled it enough visually and they gave you enough things stimulating to be like, okay, this is interesting.
I actually think this is one of the best examples I've seen in a long time of just telling a story through images.
Right.
And not relying on dialogue or any kind of exposition to fill in the blanks. Just letting you kind of build the narrative as it goes. And, I mean, I don't know. Jonathan Glazer, I've been an appreciator of his for a while. He was a music video guy and advertising guy back in the day. Most famous, I have like a collection of his music videos. Most famously, like, did work for Radiohead and Blur and Massive Attack. And he's always kind of had like a strange, eerie quality. And he certainly loves Kubrick. And you see that all over this film.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, we've seen so much of Scarlett Johansson, and it's like, how many faces of Scarlett Johansson is there? And she keeps surprising us, and she can keep doing new and interesting things.
Well, they're sort of similar shades, I think, some of the characters she's been doing lately.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she gives enough of a difference between the different kind of
shades of those characters. Used.
What?
It's how she's used.
Yeah, and it's... I think what she does right as an actress... is I think that she'll give over to these people, mm-hmm. like, I guess, visions in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that that's what an actor or actress should. What you don't get is like a Johnny Depp over the top kind of weird thing from her.
Yeah, you never feel. I mean, I don't know. I'm not on set with her, but she doesn't seem like the type of person you have to rein in or have to give a lot of specific direction to. She seems like she's very malleable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's good, especially for a character like this that is so kind of blank.
Yeah.
But in a way that's kind of disarming. And I didn't know this till kind of recently, but apparently the people she picks up in the movie mm-hmm. are not actors. They were actually people that she, like, they had hidden cameras in the car, and she was, like, actually hitting on people and getting them to come into the car, and then once they're in there... She was like, okay, I'm Scarlett Johansson, we're doing a movie, do you want to be included in this scene? And then they would go off and do those other scenes.
So
there's a kind of naturalism to those scenes that is so, a lot more verite, if you will, than the studied, cold, otherworldly stuff that Glazer does with them.
Well, I mean, I do agree with you, but I mean, it's kind of interesting when you think about that, because you're still getting that, what you're getting from Scarlett, in doing that, is you're getting her to basically, she's kind of already being the huntress in that kind of sense.
Yeah, in
because
in
she knows what's ways. Going on, but they don't.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of, that's kind of an interesting perspective.
Yeah. And I was trying to think of, like, you know, what is a movie about?
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, it doesn't beat you over the head with much. I mean, obviously, there's this thing of humanity. But I also kind of took maybe sort of a feminist read of it. Of how, you know, she has all of this sexual agency and all of the sexual power that she uses
mm-hmm.
To, you know, quote-unquote devour. You know, I don't want to give stuff away, but the way that the movie sort of ends is really interesting in that context of mm-hmm. when she decides to, quote-unquote, give up her agency to be more human, then things kind of turn around.
Yeah. I mean, I still find it... I don't know. We might have to touch... I mean, we'll definitely discuss this later on. I'll see how I feel. But again, I just don't feel like that the... That portion, I guess it's the second act, because the third act's really short. I don't feel like if it just doesn't, and it's not leading, I'm not saying leading like as in I need somebody to walk me through it, because I love the first part that didn't walk you through at all. Yeah. What I'm saying is it just became a little like, I don't know, like some kind of like E.T. bullshit.
I get you. I think that, and to some degree, I think that was intentional, is to for you to make you think that that's where the story was going, and to I sort of to lull you into some sort of safety. But yeah, and I don't know. I've this movie has not left my brain since I've seen it, and I've seen it about 3 weeks ago, and it's just still just kind of rattling in there. Partly because it's just so atmospheric and so beautiful and so creepy and different, and the soundtrack, the score, it has this strange kind of screechy violin-y sort of feline sounding score.
No, the score to me was like, where I saw a lot of, besides Kubrick, the other reminiscent thing I saw was Psycho. You've got the whole eye, you've got an eye shot, that was very reminiscent in the movie. You've also got, just the music in general. I was thinking of Psycho quite a bit. So
All right, well, let's go ahead now and move into our last review, which is The Trial, speaking of Psycho.
Yeah.
Segway.
So The Trial is an Orson Welles film. Okay, I gotta ask a question about it.
Sure.
Is it, did you know going in what kind of experience this was going to be?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, so I saw it and I thought that it was going to be like a courtroom procedural kind of thing.
Yeah.
Then I learned it was Orson Welles. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. And as it's... anyways, so this movie is not a courtroom procedural. What it is it's a sort of a surrealistic... talking about some of these guys like David Lynch and... just random, a very symbolic, atmospheric movie.
Yeah.
The film is about a guy who's just, like, he's kind of pursued by police and by this, like, kind of societal...
bureaucracy.
Laws and bureaucracy, and he just kind of is trying to get over it himself, and he's kind of prideful, but he's trying to understand his place in the world. Yeah. So, I think that's all you really need to know. This is another film that's sort of bizarre.
Uh-huh. And stars Anthony Perkins as the lead shortly after Psycho.
Very shortly after.
Yeah.
And which was sort of strange also, because there is some there's a moment with a light swinging that was very reminiscent of Psycho, at least to me. The film in general, at first I was like, what's going on here? And then as I started to ease into and kind of realize what it was, I was like, okay, this is really interesting. And Orson Welles says this is his best film.
It's the one he was the most proud of, even though apparently had very mixed reviews, which you can understand given 1962.
That is for sure. I think a lot of people were influenced by this film. I find it to be a very interesting and also atmospheric, and there's definitely some not tongue-in-cheek, but some just some under the surface kind of things going on. And this is I do definitely think it has some undertones about some our religious world and kind of the rules of society and things of that nature. I mean, Anthony Perkins, it's kind of a strange performance from him, but a good one.
He's kind of put through the ringer in this movie. He has to kind of do everything.
Yeah.
As the story keeps changing, he has to sort of change with it. He's being pursued by all these police and all of these bureaucrats and lawyers and stuff. And it's very kind of fantasy, strange, Escher-esque world.
Well, they set you up and they tell you that there's going to... They tell you almost right away
that there's
going to be a dream logic to it.
There's kind of a prologue done with slideshow, which sort of comes back at the end. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're never actually told what the charges are. So, you know, this is based on a Franz Kafka novel.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, you know, it deals with a lot of this kind of surrealist, absurdist existentialism.
Yeah. And guilt and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's... I mean, it's kind of impenetrable. It's sort of, you know, the movie is constantly taking you on wild left turns. And every time you think you got a handle on a scene, the movie sort of changes. It's sort of like a Rubik's Cube. It just kind of, like, you know, switches and reverses, and then you're somewhere else doing something else, arguing about something else with somebody else.
There are connections, and I mean,
there is sort of a Lewis Carroll-esque sort of through line, but...
Well, this is no different than something like a Mulholland Drive or something like that. You're pulling from the different parts, but no, there is definitely a power dynamic flip.
Yeah.
In all of the scenes, and specifically if you go into the male and female relations, it gets interesting.
Yeah.
Did you like the film? I guess.
I did.
I'm not getting a strong sense of that.
I did. I think that I'm kind of more fresh off of this than you are.
Mm-hmm.
But I did like the movie. I think that it's definitely interesting to look at, given that, you know, it was made by a well-known Hollywood auteur, but it's so radically avant-garde. It feels almost something more like a Buñuel film,
mm-hmm.
And a European art house film and it was made in Europe. And the set design is so specific and strange, and I actually think that Terry Gilliam got a lot for Brazil from this movie.
Okay, I was gonna see if you were gonna say that, because I didn't want to, because I feel like I say that, you know, bring up him a lot. So I'm really glad you said that. No, it did. There were parts where there were, like, cooks on the wall, and it reminded me, it was very reminiscent of that, the things where they get hung up on. The bureaucracy of it.
Stacked papers and books everywhere, and to the point that it's kind of becomes this, you know, dreamscape.
Well, the dream logic too.
Yeah.
Getting into that. They talk about that, and then you definitely get that kind of sense by the later halves of Brazil specifically.
Mm-hmm. And sort of like the way that you go through this story where you're following this guy and strange stuff keeps happening, and the guy himself is your only stable thing.
Well, the office kind of reminded me.
Well, and it also reminded me a lot of Naked Lunch, the Cronenberg Naked Lunch, and the way he decided to approach that, the storytelling reminded me a lot of this movie, and I appreciate it maybe a little bit more than I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Perkins is really good in it, you know, and. And I thought that maybe, I was trying to think of a couple different ways to read it, and there's a few interesting things in here to know. I kind of maybe thought maybe this had something to do with post-Blacklist
mm-hmm.
kind of stuff going on.
I was wondering, like, McCarthyism and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, because it's the whole idea of that you're being charged for something you don't even know what they're charging you with, but it kind of doesn't matter. They have the power against you regardless.
Right.
And I wondered if maybe that, you know, because Blacklist was more or less over by the late 50s, but I wonder if we're still feeling kind of the reverberations of that through this, sure. Or the way he decides to use this Kafka novel. Also, intertextually, it's interesting to know that Anthony Perkins was closeted his entire life and died in 1992 of AIDS,
mm-hmm.
And had kind of a strange relationship with women his entire life. Apparently he was always hit on. By all these famous actresses, but never kind of took their advances. He eventually got married into his late 30s. But yeah, I mean, all of that came down in 92 when he eventually died of AIDS. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to look at his perspective as a character through that lens. I'm not saying that that's, you know, what everyone was intentionally doing.
Well, I mean, you can definitely kind of, because he does have those awkward kind of liaisons.
Yeah.
And there did seem kind of a sense to that. So, I mean, I don't think it's just you saying that. I kind of had some of that kind of feeling to it as well.
Yeah. I mean, You know, the especially, you know, some of the lines in the movie. At one point, Orson Welles, who is also in the movie as well, kind of plays the antagonist, says something to the effect of, it's better to be safe in chains than to be free. Mm. And weird lines like that that kind of pop up and you're like, okay, you know, obviously I'm kind of retroactively reading the movie in that context, but it does lend itself to that to some extent.
To that kind of a read, sure. I mean, I think that you could kind of go more vague with it, though, too, and just be, like, a general, like, religious sense.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on there.
I definitely felt that way. Another movie, like, I mean, it did make some movies kind of, like, where they came from make a lot more sense. Like, the Machinist.
Yeah, kind of. The psychodramas like that, yeah.
Yeah. I think this was very influential for a lot of people.
Yeah. It feels like it kind of has to be. It feels very seminal. Like you're watching.
Well, it feels, you know, like
some
I've
of these ideas.
I feel like I've seen these shots like repeated as well.
Yeah.
Or these ideas kind of, you know, so I do feel like it does. I do feel like this is a movie that definitely needs a repeat viewing.
Like 5 or 6, yeah. Yes. Like it's so dense and it's so right. Like I just sort of let it wash over me once I realized that it's not going to have normal narrative sense.
Well, this
I just kind of let the experience. I just sort of experienced it, which is what you do with, you know, art films. And then you through repeat viewing, you start to analyze and break things down.
Well, this is one of the movies where this is one of three movies where I really felt lost. Like you're talking about. And to me, the experience, it's definitely a very different movie, but the only experience, La Dolce Vita, was the only thing that I've really had this kind of experience watching. Like, I've just been like, okay. I mean, it's probably better now that I've, you know, have a little bit more of a film education and I know how to break some of the things down, but it definitely was very dense.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if I would definitely wouldn't recommend it to somebody who's not down for this kind of experience. I like these kind of strange, kind of surrealistic, existential, whatever kind of journeys,
mm-hmm.
The avant-garde, like you mentioned early kind of journey. But I definitely people who aren't into a strange kind of movie, I wouldn't recommend it for them, but for anybody else wanting to see some like, and also, you know what? I've never seen Anthony Perkins in anything else besides Psycho. So it was nice to see him because I loved his performance in that. And I know he got typecast. Yeah. But this is definitely, I wouldn't say this is typecasting, but he definitely used a similar kind of dark, kind of light.
Yeah. Well, I think Welles knew what he was doing by casting him at that point because he's being charged with something. You first originally, you're taking his side because you feel like, you feel like him, where it's like, whoa, wait, what's going on? Like, and then as the movie goes, he seems to become more and more secure and more powerful in his position. And he starts to take on more sort of his own power. And I think that Welles kind of knew that the switch that he could do in Psycho would be useful here.
Yeah, and again, I do feel like that there are definitely, I'm sorry, but there's a scene specifically where there's like this interrogation, well, it's not interrogation, it's like this, he goes into this room and these two people that he turned in were basically being tortured.
Yeah.
And they literally do the whole shot where the, hanging light is swinging.
Yeah.
And I kind of mentioned it earlier, but I was like, huh, that's interesting that he would reuse that in such a blatant fashion.
That scene specifically is what made me think of blacklisting, because a lot of these people eventually were absolved by pointing fingers at other people. So I don't know. It's an interesting film. It's full of ideas. Again, I think it's more interesting than good in some ways, but I do think it's definitely worth a watch, especially if you're into Orson Welles or into European art house kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think what made me eventually like it is because I've always liked, like, I liked, what's the one from David Lynch, the hell one? What's that called?
Lost Highway.
Lost Highway, there
we go. Which has a similar kind of logic to it. Yeah.
Well, see, I've always leaned to the darker types of these, or the machinist, these type of dark kind of surrealistic journeys. I prefer them over something weird and light or whatever. But
yeah,
but it tends to make more sense when you can kind of make this dark, weird, strange atmosphere. So, I dug it, but it's definitely for a very certain crowd.
Yes. And I would like to say that next week, we're going to loosen it up a little, but we're probably not. because I'm going to be assigning Uncle Boonmi, who can recall his past lives, which I've heard is a very strange experience also. This is a modern Thailand film.
So we're going into the deep.
Yeah,
the
we're deep just recesses, like, huh? Plunging into the into the darkness.
One of us is going to go mad. So, probably. I mean, that's the point of this podcast now, right?
Is to drive each other crazy, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
But if anybody has anything to say about The Trial, Under the Skin, or Uncle Boonmi, you can get in contact with us at you can get in contact to us at our Facebook, facebook.com/jabberpodcast. Follow us there and you can see any news items that we post between episodes. And you can also weigh in on any of these things or any feedback on the show at our email, which is jabberandthedrone@gmail.com. And you can find us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. When you're there, please leave us a review and a star rating. But you can also find us on Pocket Cast and listen to us on your favorite mobile device. You can read my movie reviews that I do every week for the Idaho State Journal at saladforkreviews.blogspot.com. You can read Richard's writings that he does on his blog, rdwally.weebly.com. You can read some of the content that I provide for the Seattle-based website, MacGuffin, at mcguff.in/author/Cassidy. And you can listen to our nephew or niece podcast, Brad and Amanda's Quarter Life Crisis, over at quartercrisis.podbean.com. Last few episodes, they've been talking a lot about trailers and kind of making fun of them, and that's a lot of fun to listen to. But until then, we'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week.
Bye.